What is happening, everybody? Welcome to the Fight Network Studios. This is Five Rounds Today. I am John Ramdean alongside my good pal, Robin Black. And it is going down on Saturday night. The return of the prodigy, BJ Penn.
It is?
No, it's not. It's for not. Christ's sakes. BJ Penn off the card. I think we're all anticipating the return of one of the most, respected, most talented fighters, certainly at 155 pounds. This is a guy that arguably beat George St. Pierre, defeated Matt Hughes at 170 pounds, fought Lyoto Machida, fought Renzo Gracie, a pioneer of mixed martial arts. We were just hoping to see what would happen after the training camp and all the months spent at that Greg Jackson team in New Mexico. Donald Cerrone, one of his training partners, Anthony Pettis was down there. We were hoping to get to see something from BJ Penn. However, we're going to get to see something from Luke Rockhold as he takes on Michael Bisping, who takes this fight on 2 weeks' notice. And initially, I thought about the fact that Luke Rockhold was getting prepared to face an even better Chris Weidman. Luke Rockhold's not a dummy. He's a smart guy. He understands that Chris Weidman, undefeated, before he lost to Luke Rockhold, all the gold goes with it, all the big parties and everything that you're invited to, that gets transferred over to Luke Rockhold. Now you have a reinvigorated, remotivated Chris Weidman who was gunning harder than before. Luke Rockhold knew that. He knew exactly the type of athlete that was going to be standing across the cage, so he was preparing for that guy. Chris Weidman is out. In steps Michael Bisping on 2 weeks' notice, and I thought that this was just going to be a blowout, considering the fact that they faced each other before. But you pointed some things out to me. Michael Bisping pointed out some things. Michael Bisping's a guy who's a born fighter. He's a guy that has had so many experiences, the reps. He's just going to go into cruise control. These last couple of weeks, he's been spending, of course, he's trying to sharpen his skills.
Yeah.
But the biggest thing he needed to do was to make sure that he can go 25 minutes.
Yeah.
Because when push comes to shove, Michael Bisping will go into cruise control. And Michael Bisping knows how to fight. I think this fight is closer than a lot of people think it may be.
Yeah, I think there's
it
a lot of reasons.
Be.
It could be. It very well, Michael Bisping's in this fight. Now, is Michael Bisping going to win this fight? Maybe. If Michael Bisping wins this fight, is every single person, and there are thousands of them, just dozens and dozens that I communicate with, friends on Twitter and people on the internet that I love chatting with, he has no chance. You saw what Rockhold did to him last time. Now, if Bisping were to win this fight, and that is a big if, but we know it's possible. We've seen crazier things. If he won this fight, would it alter the view of those people? I hope so, because part of our motivation is where we want people to really see what fighting really is, really see it, learn, constantly have their understanding and their inspiration that they draw from fighting go up. And one of the key things to that is just understanding a whole bunch of things as they relate to this fight. The first one being every single fight is a unique event. Every fight. People are like, oh, so-and-so blew that guy out in a minute. He'll kill him next time. That could be true.
Yeah.
It may not be true.
And I think that's what people are looking at. They're looking at, based on history, the likelihood of, some of the things we've seen in the past. Matt Serra, for example. Matt Serra beat George St. Pierre.
Okay, so Matt Serra is going to blow him out next time they fight.
Exactly. But a lot of people are saying, well, there's certain factors. George didn't have a good camp. He's buying into his own hype. Apparently he had a very close cousin that passed away. So a bunch of things affected him mentally in that first fight. Now, to get a well-prepared George St. Pierre, George St. Pierre motivated that you're going to get a different GSP. And we did get to see a different GSP.
So that is true. And that is how it went. But we think of epic wins. Chris Weidman twice beating Anderson Silva. Weird wins, but epic wins. Connor beaten the greatest of all time in 13 seconds. Ronda going out and arm barring the top five. Pick any even more, Cain Velasquez going out and beating Junior the second time and just beating him senseless.
Yeah.
Each of those wins, those people had things going on too. It's got a sick aunt. They've got an injury that they can't talk about. They've got something happened with them financially. Life. Every fighter deals with it. Some of them, when they lose, they say it's what caused it. Some of them, when they win, they go, it's part of the game. So, but it's every one of these examples that we're making and every one of these variables all supports the idea. Every single fight is a unique event. I know this is going to sound like a stretch, but you literally are a different person than you were a year ago. Now, I could ask you how that is. You know,
sure.
Well, I learned this, and I work out this way, and, you know, I studied this. All that is true. But even on a cellular level, all of your cells have disappeared and new ones have come in. I know that sounds fantastical and a little, you know, a little out there. But it is true.
Yes, it is true.
Now, and that is not to make a point that this is an entirely different Luke Rockhold. But it's a different guy in a different state of mind who's trained differently.
Who could be overconfident.
It's overconfident.
I kicked this guy's ass. You know, I'm going to reel back my training over the – I'm not getting ready for Luke Rockhold. I'm getting ready for a guy who has eye damage and he couldn't hit me the first time. This is going to be easy.
Exactly. You tell yourself it's easy, there's going to be a moment when it's not. When that happens, how do you react? And I think if we're going to talk about the mental aspects of it, I want the people, our friends that are watching this, to think about themselves – at their job, and on one day at their job, it's awesome. You love everybody.
Fridays.
And think about Mondays, hungover Monday. Luke Rockhold will not be hungover. But that's one thing that has framed it differently. Think about, you know, that when you first met your wife or your girlfriend or your husband or your boyfriend or whatever, at first they were this, and then later they're a bitch, you know, or even better. But things change. Nothing changed. Those are the same two people. But the way that they interfaced with each other in the world, perspective, who they are, how they felt. I mean, ask Kenny Florian about one of his fights. And I heard this from Coach, what was his strength and conditioning coach? I'm forgetting his name. Coach Kearns.
Yeah, Kearns.
Kevin Kearns.
Kevin Kearns, yeah.
Kevin Kearns tells a story of Kenny Florian, when he was coaching him, winning a fight, but having the most insane diarrhea. Did nothing different. Trained, prepared, cut weight, replenished, but he had insane diarrhea. Now, I'm not saying that has to happen for Bisping to win, but dozens and dozens of these variables are at play in every single fight, and they're at play in both men, and the dynamic is different, and everything is different. Am I saying Michael Bisping's going to win this fight? No, I'm not. Am I saying Michael Bisping can win this fight? Of course he can.
Especially when you hear Luke Rockhold talk about him. And he doesn't talk about him a lot. But what he does say is that he's just very weird to deal with. You're dealing with a guy that's showing you angles. You can't necessarily get a read on things. He's very, very aggressive. Yeah. And he knows how – it's not as if Luke Rockhold is saying, this guy is a wimp. I'm going to go smoke him. He goes, I understand how good Michael Bisping is. And he has something that is different than every other fighter out there. However, I'm just going to do my thing. And I think that's one of the reasons why I like Luke Rockhold in this fight is just like Dominic Cruz, where Uriah Faber's talking about Dominic Cruz. Oh, I beat him before. I did this, 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 and this. Dominic Cruz like, I don't care about Uriah Faber. I am going to do Dominic Cruz. And Luke Rockhold says, I don't care about Bisping. I'm going to do Luke Rockhold.
It's true. And we know that mindset and your approach and how you frame things matters. And I know that some people will be like, oh, man, it's just a fight. You go and you punch a guy.
Mm-hmm.
21 minutes of something happening. You can't see. You're injured. You can't breathe. You hear weird noises. You fell down. You don't quite remember. It's all mindset now.
Mm-hmm.
It's all who you are.
Speaking of mindset, you got to bring me the book. Mindset.
Yes, I will. I will. Yeah, I will. It's a fantastic book.
Faraz Sahabi, if any of our viewers out there, he said this is a book that is a must-see for your mental development, and you've read it, and you said it's outstanding.
Phenomenal. It goes back to the root of, do you see the world as a fixed mindset where this is who I am, and this is how big this is, and this is how much this works, and I guess, and this is who you are, or do you see the world as a growth mindset where if I practice piano for 3 hours, I will be 3 hours better at piano. If I read this book, I'll know some things I didn't know yesterday. If I lift weights, I will get bigger. If I run, I will run better. If you understand that you have the ability to shape you, Luke Rockhold understands that. Luke Rockhold fully understands that. Also, you can do everything right. This is one of the issues. Michael Bisping needs to do everything right. And he is an underdog and has some disadvantages, not the least of which is 2 weeks notice and having lost the fight. So he needs to do everything right. Mm-hmm. Doing it all, and he is. He's looking at it. He's framing it. I won't be overtrained. This is an advantage, and it may well be.
Mm-hmm.
If he believes it is, then it is. He's looking at it and saying, I experienced Luke Rockhold. I know what he is. That's an advantage. He's saying, I'm the kind of guy cut out for this. He's truly looking at all of the
amping himself
challenges.
Up.
Yeah, but he is doing it truthfully. Because if you say, this guy cannot handle me, I'll beat anybody on any given day, you'll go into the cage and get killed. And the complexity of preparing yourself mentally for a fight is multi-layered. And if at any point of it, you're just like, nobody can beat me, man. I'm tougher than all these guys. That is no preparation at all.
Yeah.
Those are lies. Those are shields. Those are taking facts.
And that takes care of itself inside of the cage, though.
Yeah. But if you've got yourself there just by going, no, none of these guys can do anything to me, and all of a sudden something goes wrong, and you see a weird feeling in your hands, because that's part of it, and your heart rate is going weird, and your time is being affected differently because of the way that you're feeling and the hormones that are traveling through your body, all of a sudden, all that shit, those lies you told yourself don't matter.
Mm-hmm.
So now Bisping is doing the right thing. He's truly examining it and liking what he sees and finding the answers that work for him that he truly believes. He believes this is good. He believes he can win. That's great. And that could overcome Luke Rockhold. But then Luke Rockhold is taking that and he's also handling it properly, because one of the really true things that any top Olympic level mental preparation coach will tell you is you must recognize that this is truly a hard assignment, truly will require everything you have. You must meet it with everything that you have, because it requires your full attention and your full dedication. If you do that, Luke Rockhold's going to win. I mean, can he get caught? Can he get hurt?
Sure.
Of course it can happen. But Luke just because Bisping's doing everything right, now Rockhold's response is he is taking your tennis hit over the fence of preparation, mental preparation, and he's spiking it back at you because he's mentally prepared too. And that's the dynamic that's at play. The best Michael Bisping can walk in this fight and win it. But if the best Michael Bisping walks in this fight and meets the best Luke Rockhold, that's a tough one.
I want to continue this conversation about UFC 199 and the main event, so we're going to take a quick timeout. When we come back, more of Five Rounds Today. Welcome back to the FN Studios. This is Five Rounds Today. We're talking about UFC 199. Before the break, we're talking about Luke Rockhold and Michael Bisping. Can Michael Bisping win this fight? Yes, it's a fight. Anything can happen. Michael Bisping knows how to fight. He's been in there. He said, I felt how strong Luke Rockhold is. He's not that strong.
He's the second most wins in the UFC.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And one of the things I was going to ask you is, before the break, we were talking about how Michael Bisping goes in there 100%. He may not win the fight. He may win the fight. But Josh Thompson, the teammate of Luke Rockhold, says, there's been times I felt 100%. I've given it my all. I was very proud of the performance that I had, but I didn't win the fight.
Yeah.
Even when you have your best moments, doesn't guarantee that you're going to win the fight, which kind of works towards Michael Bisping. For Luke Rockhold, he can have all the best moments, but Michael Bisping can still seize an opportunity and change the way the fight is going to play out.
So I do the podcast with David Mullins, and he is a sports psychology consultant, and he prepares guys. And one of his biggest things, and we've talked about this just on a personal level about life and work and stuff. And his biggest thing is he's looking at it all with you. We're going to lay it all on the table. And we are going to categorize things. And this is not just a fight thing. You do this in your life, and your life will get better. You will experience less stress, and you will accomplish more things. What is a controllable? What is something through effort and focus and hard work we can control? And what are non-controllables? Which, no matter how much we frustrate ourselves, how much we fixate on it, what we do with it, we cannot control it. Once we identify it as a non-controllable, we got to let it go. We have to let it go. If your boss runs things a certain way, and you have no influence over that, and you keep going, I don't understand why our mailroom works this way. You drive yourself crazy.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can do about that. You must identify that as a non-controllable and look in your life as what the – I don't know why my wife reacts that way. I hate to tell you, but that's a non-controllable. What is a controllable is, how do I act, and when she reacts that way, how do I act?
Or you could get a divorce.
That's another controllable.
You're in control of
that.
Yes,
that is a controllable. You're choosing. But I want to stay with my wife.
Yeah.
Well, now getting a divorce is no longer an option. You're categorizing things. So my wife is driving me crazy because she reacts this way. If only I could make her not react that way. That's a non-controllable. That is absolutely – you cannot make her act – or your friend or your business partner. Or the guy, the drummer in your band.
Exactly.
I don't care who it is.
Your dog who keeps pissing on your couch.
You cannot make somebody else do something. You, no matter how hard you try. And this is the what obsessive people will sometimes – and control freaks do. So you categorize that as a non-controllable and you go, what can I control? Well, I certainly control how I work with them.
Yeah.
And if and when they react a certain way, I don't have to go, yeah, but you did this. And this does date back to when people go crazy and they like give the finger to Ronda Rousey. Or, see, I knew it. And then you're like, why would you act that way in a civilized society? Yeah. Why are you being so hateful to this human being? And they're like, well, she told people this and she did that. Okay, that's a non-controllable. You cannot control what Ronda Rousey, how she acts to people. You cannot control that she's rude or mean or wouldn't shake somebody's hand or call their name. But you can control how you react to that. So if your explanation for that is Ronda Rousey did X, Y, and Z, non-controllable. She's Ronda Rousey. She didn't even know you.
Yeah.
So you can't control that. So, yeah, she had it coming. That's why I called her some crazy name on the internet and spewed hate everywhere. You have the control to whether or not you do that. If you're saying
some people just don't have control.
I know it's true, but you over time you can develop that. If you get in your mind,
it's true.
My controllable is me, how I react and how I act. Saying, why did you say hateful things about Ronda Rousey? And your answer was, well, she did this. That's irrelevant.
Yeah.
You are choosing how you react to that. So that's a controllable. You could fix that. I have no idea how I got here, but it's something about Luke Rockhold and Michael Bisping. Oh, yes. I know where I was going. So you can do everything in your power and be the best. Josh Thompson told you, we used that example. You can be the best, have the best performance possible and lose. The outcome of the fight is a non-controllable.
Right.
The outcome of the fight is a non-controllable. How three guys sitting outside a cage decide to tick. I mean, they might even just accidentally put blue where they meant red.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You might slip on a banana peel. There's a million variables. You cannot control the outcome of a fight, but you can control your performance. So that's what you do. You don't – and worse than the outcome of a fight are the consequences of the outcome of a fight. People are like, but if I lose, then the people on the internet will say this.
Yeah.
If I don't win, this might be my only title shot. If I do win, I'll get this. Those are all non-controllables. Yeah. What's a controllable is when I walk in there, I've done every piece of preparation that I could
do
under the circumstances. So Bisping's circumstances are pretty limited. I came in the best mindset I could possibly be in. I came in with the true dedication to everything I needed to do, and I allowed myself to go in and be my best me. If you do that and lose, I haven't spoken to Carlos Condit after the Robbie Lawler fight, and he shook his head when that hand was raised.
Yeah.
But you know that guy knows he had a brilliant
fight. But remember,
fight.
He also talked about – I'm sure he knows it now. It's because there's been positive reinforcement, especially when you go into the gym. Oh, you won, champ.
Yeah.
You were robbed,
blah, blah, blah.
Because he talked about retirement after that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if that's because he was disappointed. But one of the things – because you're talking about
– one quick thing.
Yeah, of course.
When they're both standing there on the fence like this, nothing else mattered.
Nothing else
mattered. Those two had – the things they could do, they did. And before that moment of who's the champ or who's not the champ, in that moment, that must have been one of the most special moments of those guys' lives.
No doubt.
Standing there, that guy's over there. Okay, we stopped punching
Cormier
and kicking
each
other.
Cormier and Gustafson was the same thing. They left it all inside of the cage. And one of the advantages, you say for Bisping, that you know this isn't ideal, taking this fight on short notice. Luke Rockhold, though, back-to-back, of the most intense camps he's ever had in his career. And Bisping has said also, if you watch the Countdown show and you see the different videos that they have out there, that he's saying, it's a stressful environment to go through these camps.
Yeah.
So now that I didn't have to go through this camp, I haven't had to deal with that stress where Luke Rockhold has had to deal with it for back-to-back fights. So how can that serve Bisping well?
It can. He's examined it and looked for the positives, and you believe there are positives. Now, there are negatives.
Sure.
One of which is I'm not in the same kind of shape. Bisping's answer is I ran my heels and I got the exact same times and I had the exact same heart rate. I am in the same kind of shape. Is that true or not? I don't know. I don't know. He doesn't know. So it's an uncontrollable. We did everything we could. We did what we could under the circumstances. Because if you start beating yourself up, ah, damn it, when I was in Toronto, I should have trained more. Because he was here shooting a film. Yeah. Well, I can't, that's a non-control. That's the past. God, you can't even control the – you certainly can't control the future. You can barely control the present. We definitely can't control the past. So just let it go and focus on the moment. But Rockhold, I mean, I don't have the experience to draw on. I have little bits at low levels to draw on. And I'm not Luke Rockhold, and I don't have his capacity. I don't have his experience. I don't have all the things he learned. So – I don't know what he's feeling, but I'll tell you on the low level, and I don't know how he's adapted, but I'll tell you if I asked him about fight number 7 or 6 or 5 fights I had, even though he was 100 times the athlete, younger, better on every level, I bet he still experienced the stress
of course.
In 6 weeks, this guy's trying to kill you. And that's a good stress because there's times where you go, oh, I don't want to train today. And if it hits you for a moment in I better train. If it hits you for a moment, that guy's training, you better train. If it hits you for a moment, some of those non-controllables early in your life might help you. I'm going to be defined. Part of me is going to be defined by my performance. Then I better go out and give it all I have. So that can help you. I don't know what it's like to be the best fighter in the world. I'll never know. I'll never have any understanding unless I get to sit with some of these guys for long periods of time and ask the right questions. But I don't know. But he may still have that experience when he's in there, that pushing himself too hard, that drive, late at night, sitting there 5 weeks out and suddenly hitting you, oh, my God, what if I lose? Oh, my God, I've lost before. Man, I can't let all this go away. Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Is it nothing? Then we don't know.
We're going to take another break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the co-featured bout. It is the third fight between Dominic Cruz and the California kid, Uriah Faber. Welcome back to 5 Rounds Today. Ram, Dean, and Black with you. Coming up this Saturday night from the Forum in Los Angeles, California, UFC 199, the main event, the middleweight championship on the line. Luke Rockhold, Michael Bisping, the co-featured bout of the night, the California kid, the former WEC champion, taking on, in our opinion, one of the most talented fighters in maybe in the history of mixed martial arts in Dominic Cruz. He's analytical. He's intelligent. His fighting style is beautiful. It is new. It's very, very different. And I think he's going to present a lot of problems for Uriah Faber. I know a lot of people believe, you know, you see that, watch that second fight. It was a close fight. I think initially people thought, yes, that fight was Dominic Cruz. You go back and say, oh, Faber had some great moments in that fight. But I think we're dealing with a different level of person. I mean, Uriah Faber, he doesn't need this to make money. He makes money. I do like that about Uriah Faber, that he doesn't need to be doing this. And the fact that he still gets in there, I love that. That's what one of my favorite things about fighters. Real fighters get in there to throw down. Whereas Dominic Cruz, he's a martial artist. He's a fighter. He's a scrapper. And he's an intellect. And I think it's all those attributes that will allow him to win this fight.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a tough one. Like, who could have thought 5 years-ish, beats Demetrius Johnson, and then he's injured a bunch of times.
Yeah.
Comes back and destroys Mizugaki.
Like, destroys.
Destroys him. Yeah. And then beats the best bantamweight in the world in his absence. And I just, like, I did a bunch of little breakdowns with Dan Hardy. The one on Rockhold Bisping is out now. People want to look for it. And we did a few others.
It was good. Very good. Yeah, if you haven't seen it, go to YouTube. Awesome stuff.
We thank you. We did a few others. And including Dominic Cruz and Uriah Faber. I think it's probably out by the time you're watching this, too. He was talking about Conor McGregor at one point, separate. And Dan Hardy, I'm a big fan. People know that. I talk openly about that.
Me too.
As somebody who studies him and fighters, and you see I've developed some expertise in it. When I say he moves different than this guy.
He does.
He does. We talked about a little bit with your reaction to Ronda and being able to say, yeah, but she started it. Yeah, but you chose to not let that go in a moment of choice. People also hate Conor McGregor for many reasons, some of which are reaction.
He's a winner, too. Yeah. People also hate winners.
And they hate loudmouths, too. And
yeah, that's
in
true.
Some case, they hate arrogance.
They hate winners that are loudmouths.
Yeah, true. True. But many of them love Nate Diaz, but it's just personality. It's bombast. Who knows what it is? But Dan Hardy said, long after, and he's an expert. He's an expert. He's developed, like Dominic, he's developed a high level of expertise in actually knowing what's going on. And he said, long after we're done, when Conor McGregor's done fighting, it'll take a long time after for us, for the world to acknowledge that he is one of the great martial artists of our generation. And I thought that was really cool. I respect Dan a lot. I like him very much. I like his work. And I didn't know that I should have assumed.
Felt that way?
Because that's true. Conor McGregor is one of the great martial artists of our generation. Now, if you hate him and you want to disagree with that for hate reasons, you can. Why not? You can do whatever you want. But if Dom and us and Dan and BJJ
even Nate Diaz has had some positive things to say about Conor McGregor.
Lawrence Kenshin and people who dedicate their lives to studying this say that, it's probably true. But his point was, it'll take many years till people see that, because you've got to get away some of the heat and the passion and the anger.
Let things cool down.
Exactly. And then go back. Yeah. We can look at it analytically, because whether you like him or not, you're looking at technical things and marveling at them. My point of all this was, Dominic Cruz, we're making a grave error, and we are doing a grave disservice to people who love fighting and want more to know and study it and see what's going on and know the truths and the facts of it. We've done a great disservice understating how incredible he is.
Yeah, I think it's just because he's been so inactive. And the point being, he's been so inactive, and then you see him after long periods of inactivity smoking the champions.
That's what I'm getting at. Now think of this.
That's shocking.
You disappear 5 years ago. In those 5 years, everybody.
The world is passing you by.
But the world has time to catch up.
Yeah.
They have time to study what you do, to, as the world of fighting, as the organism that is the global understanding of fighting, as it's traveling, it's grabbing the wrestling from over here. It's picking up spinning kicks that were added over here. It's changing how people stand up from the. All of that is being acquired by the amoeba of the global knowledge of fighting. It should have been, and probably has been, trying to acquire what Dominic Cruz does. 5 years he's gone. 5 years later, it comes back. They still haven't caught up.
Now, is it
5 years later of him not being able to physically and technically grow, mentally he grew, they still haven't caught up. He beat the guy, the closest thing. We usually have Dwayne's gloves.
And I was going to bring that up.
Yeah.
Because you and I were having lunch with Dwayne Ludwig. Yeah. And I think maybe the reason why is because Dwayne's like, well, you know they have the iPhone 10. They're releasing the iPhone 6 and iPhone 7. Maybe Dominic Cruz is like the iPhone 10, but he's only allowing us to see the iPhone 5. So everybody's trying to catch. It's like, I've got all these other things that people don't see. We're getting the rap.
Quickly, this iPhone 3 is out.
Yeah.
And in the world of iPhone 3s and their competitors, he was the iPhone 8.
Yeah.
Now we're the iPhone 7, and he's the iPhone 10.
Exactly. Dominic Cruz, a remarkable athlete, individual, fighter. We're going to take a timeout. We're going to come back and talk more about UFC 199. There's been a lot of great cards. We're going to talk about some of the cool fights on the undercard of this incredible fight card going down in Cali. Welcome back to Five Rounds today. Ramdeen and Black with you, talking about UFC 199, which goes down June 4th from the Forum in Los Angeles, California. The middleweight championship up for grabs. Luke Rockhold, Michael Bisping, who takes the fight on short notice. Of course, Dominic Cruz and Uriah Faber get it on for a third time, potentially final time.
We were talking about how great Dom was. Uriah, again, can win this
fight.
Yes,
he can.
It's a very hard test, and he's got to be perfect. He's got to get him. He's got to do something. The only really he's done, which is landed
knocked
on him
down
clean
and dragged him down.
So
he does
possible.
Have the skill set.
Yeah, he does.
However, we've seen that Dominic Cruz just keeps getting better and better and better.
Yeah.
It mentally keeps getting better. However, the one thing that I have seen, as much as when Dominic Cruz talks about the fight, he's like, I don't care what Uriah Faber is bringing to the table. I'm going to do Dominic Cruz. Dominic Cruz dislikes Uriah Faber. And Faber's like, I don't know what this guy's problem is. Like, why is he so concerned with my life? And my question to you is, can that be work against Dominic Cruz in the sense that when you start fighting with emotion that I really hate this guy, it can kind of throw you off and you fight out of character because you're fighting on emotion opposed to this is already a stressful scenario?
Well, I mean, there are rules and then there are exceptions, and exceptions by definition are for the exceptional. But think of who in modern times are the most emotional fighters going.
Well, Bisping was one of them.
Yeah, and that's the perfect example because he said that he was successful despite that.
Mm-hmm.
And that once he realized that that was not only not useful, it was actually a detriment, he tried to get away from it. I mean, after him, I don't even know who's a close second to going in and fighting angry.
Nick Diaz seems to be one of those guys.
Those guys are just so oddly intelligent in ways that they're just wise. They're wise in ways of science, which I believe is from Monty Python.
I have not seen Monty Python.
Nerd.
Yeah,
but they are wise in the way of martial arts. They are so. Their emotion may be put on for the purpose of making you emotional.
Mm-hmm.
And we see when they do that, it fails. We see when Conor made
Aldo
emotional, it failed.
Yeah.
I mean,
it worked for Conor.
It worked, but
Conor was the only time
Conor's been emotional. He's playing, laughing. That's an act.
Yeah, yeah.
The only time he's been emotional was with Diaz.
Yeah, right.
He lost.
Speaking of which, you want to talk about emotion. You want to talk about calming and being a martial artist. Because I don't know how many people have actually looked at this UFC 199 card. You look at the main event. Middleweight championship. It was supposed to be Weidman. It's like, okay, I'm sold.
Yeah.
Rematch, awesome.
Yeah.
And then Dominic Cruz, Uriah Faber, sold. Yeah. I love this. And then the return of BJ Penn.
Yeah.
And I think people stop looking down the list because if you look at it, you have those two title fights. BJ Penn's off the card. Now it's Cole Miller and Alex Caceres. That's
a
solid fight.
Is that on the main
card
or it's on the...
I think that's on the undercard.
Yeah, I think it's main event of the undercard. BJ was supposed to be the main event of Fox Sports 1 / TSN.
Yeah. So now you have Dan Henderson, Hector Lombard. Outstanding. Dustin Poirier, Bobby Green. Clay Guida, who's been training at Team Alpha Male, Brian Ortega, Benil Dariush, James Vick, Jessica Penne, who I have such a ton of respect for because I saw what she could take in that Joanna and Jacek fight. There are a lot of girls and a lot of dudes out there that would have bailed when they were taking a beating like that.
So the top two are the two title fights.
Yeah.
Dan and Hector. What else is on the main card?
Well, this is what I was talking about because you're talking about martial artists and people that fight with they're even keeled and no emotion. And this is a guy that I believe that will challenge for the title down the road. Max Holloway taking on Ricardo Lamas.
Ooh.
Max Holloway is one of these guys that really seems to be stress-free. He's creative. He's flowy. And he doesn't fight with emotion.
Mm-hmm. He's also really good.
He is good.
Like, he's really, really good. Jeremy Stevens had the right plan. And Jeremy Stevens we've said a lot of times since the couple of times we've spoken to him, realize how smart he is, how much he really gets it. You add all that experience. When you see him, you think of his crazy uppercut to the ceiling and power hooks. But
jumping knees.
Yeah, and it's great stuff. But there's way more to him than that. And I spoke to him and he had the right idea. He's like, I got 15 minutes to corral this guy. Couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
My guy, Cub Swanson. Couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Couldn't corral this guy. So what is he doing? He is he is manipulating the space between you in ways that make it hard for you to hit him. People don't hit him that much.
Yeah.
You know? And how's he doing that? Well, he's doing it because he's smart and he's doing it because he's technical, but he's doing it by feel too.
Mm-hmm.
Some of us can feel where you are and you can't feel where they are. That feel thing. Stephen Thompson does that by feel. It's really hard to beat because you look for an answer and he refeels it. So the issue for Lamas in this one, we love Ricardo Lamas.
Yeah.
He's put on some brilliant fights. When you watch his, I think Aldo was a decision or Aldo got him late. Decision. You go ahead and you watch that fight. He was content to fight at distance with Aldo the whole fight. And Aldo's like, oh, you're going to fight at distance with me? Cool. I'm going to win every round at distance. Unless you catch me kick me in the head really hard, which you're not going to do, I'm going to win this fight. And he's done that with a number of fights. Ricardo Lamas has been content and sort of with an unspoken, unwritten agreement to fight you at distance. He can do that with Max Holloway?
Yeah.
Can't do that with Max Holloway. So he needs to get inside of that, and that's hard. Max Holloway.
But if he does, he has four losses, Ricardo Lamas. That loss to Jose Aldo, a decision loss, playing that outside game. However, he gets in close. When he got in close, Chad Mendes.
Mm-hmm. He beat Chad Mendes?
No, he fought Chad Mendes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yuri Alcantara and Danny Castillo, all those guys, kind of powerful wrestling types, all got KO or TKO victories on him. So isn't it safer for him to play that outside game?
Not with Holloway.
So
we don't have it here. If we have to dig a little to get it, maybe UFC.com or Tapology or Wikipedia may have it, but I don't have their reach numbers. I'm pretty sure that Holloway's got a solid reach number. But he also moves his feet really well. And we've talked about this before. If you come towards me a foot and I move back a foot, it's the same distance. Mm-hmm. And Holloway's really good at that. So if you're going
to
stay...
But where can he inflict the most damage? If Lamas gets in close to him, it feels that Holloway could stop him in close. That if he fights the outside game, I might lose a decision, but I'm not going to get stopped.
So Stevens he beat... Cub Swanson he beat. He's got some other great wins. I think the last guy to beat him is Conor McGregor.
Max Holloway.
Last guy to beat him is Conor McGregor.
Because we were there in Saskatoon for the Oliveira fight.
That was just kind of a non-starter. He got a weird injury.
15-3 right now. Since that loss to Conor McGregor, beat Will Chope, Andre Feely, Clay Collard, Akira Khorasani, Cole Miller, Cub Swanson, Oliveira, and that win over Jeremy Stevens.
Now, I've got Stevens and Swanson in my mind pretty good. Those are him now.
Yeah.
The other ones were him developing to now, but I don't remember any of these guys putting him on the ground. You know who put him on the ground? Conor McGregor blew out his knee and was like, oh shit, what am I going to do? Put him on the ground. You got to put this guy. And now when he first came to the UFC, it was a blue belt on the ground. I'm sure he's way better. And because you haven't seen him on the ground much, you don't even know what he does. So that's hard. But at least we got to put him there. If you're Ricardo Lamas, you can wrestle. You're powerful. We got to try that. But he knows we want to try that. He knows that we want to try that.
He's going to be prepared
for
that.
And
he's
going to
have an answer.
He's going to hurt us out here. If we get in, he's going to have an answer inside. I'm working on the Rory versus Wonderboy breakdown. And Wonderboy wants to keep you off of this. Now, and we can say, oh, he works with Chris Weidman. Did you see the way he stopped Hendricks? When he got inside, he did. But if you don't knock out Hendricks, because he did.
Yeah.
He does it a second, a third, a fourth, a fifth, a sixth. If he can do that, eventually you got him down. And all the Chris Weidman training in the world is not enough to deal with that.
We got to take a break. Yeah. We got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the fight in Ottawa, Rory McDonald and Stephen Thompson, as well as the stack card, UFC 199, June 4th at the Forum in LA. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. We are talking about UFC 199, which goes down Saturday night at the Forum in Los Angeles. The middleweight championship on the line. Luke Rockhold, Michael Bisping, Dominic Cruz, Uriah Faber for the bantamweight championship. We're talking about this fight. I think he's one of the most spectacular fighters in the UFC right now. A very intelligent, fun to watch, fan favorite, and I believe he'll challenge for the championship somewhere down the road. Max Holloway taking on Ricardo Lamas, and you believe that Lamas has got to get in.
Yeah.
Get in on this guy, whether it's 1, 2, 18, 25, put him on the ground. But you also pointed out, because Max Holloway is such a remarkable athlete, a remarkable fighter, an evolved
learner,
and intelligent fighter who wants to learn, he wants to be the best. He says, I want to be the best fighter, certainly in Hawaii. I love BJ Penn, but I want people to think, when they think of Hawaiian mixed martial arts, they're thinking about me. And I want to be the greatest fighter of all time. When you have that mentality, you got to put the work in, and you know he's putting the work
in. Yeah, he is. So you have this idea that if you get to him and you get the body lock and you take him down, I can out-wrestle him, and then I can stabilize a position, and then I can work my game. That might not be true because we don't know what he's been doing.
Yeah.
But at least we got to go find out. We got to find out because if we kickbox on the outside, the guy's going to...
Because you were talking about Stephen Thompson and Johnny Hendricks making those comparisons.
Yeah. So same kind of thing. He doesn't have a karate background. The tools are different, but the vibe is the same. If Stephen Thompson keeps you on the outside, he kicks your face right off. If Max Holloway keeps you on the outside, he can hit you with punches and kicks and move away, move on angles. You end up all night, you're chasing him, turning back into him and getting punched. He's over here, you turn back into him and you get punched. And he maintains the distance. That's no good. So we got to get to him. In the getting to him, he's kicking you out here. We get inside. He's punching you in here. We got to get to the body lock, and we got to do it.
But
alive.
Won't he elbow you and knee you in that spot too?
The body lock is so good now, and a lot of people are working the body lock because if I shoot on your head, the second that big is he also Hawaiian, Travis Brown?
Travis Brown is, yeah.
The second that big Hawaiian turned his hips out here.
Barnett.
And elbowed Barnett's face off. And it's not the first guy who did it.
BJ.
BJ had done that.
Another Hawaiian.
All night long. Yeah, what is it with these Hawaiians and their angry elbows? All night long, he did it to Diego Sanchez.
Yeah.
Go back and watch that fight. He literally was like, when he gets in on my hips, I'll put it against the wall. I'll get a wide spread. I'll get down on the head. That you can feel the pressure there. I'll stabilize that. And I'll elbow it off. And then Travis Brown did it again. After that.
Gabriel Gonzaga.
Yeah. And then people were like, wait a second. Because it was open field double leg takedown. If a guy sprawls your face down to the ground, sternum to the back of your head, sprawls your face down, works a front face lock sequence, beats you up. Well, we can't do open field double leg takedowns anymore. They're too dangerous. We got to do it against the wall. So then guys start double legging guys against the wall, fish and fight for it, take him down. All of a sudden, big Hawaiian and little Hawaiian start doing that. And now we can't do that anymore. Oh, no. What are we going to do? Guys start shooting singles. And then all of a sudden, Pettinaris is like, okay, we're going to limp leg out of there and pound, guys. We're going to go heavy on the leg. Say, please shoot a single. When they do, we've got a whole sequence to smash you up and discourage that, too. You're like, oh, now what can we do? Well, if I get the body lock, I hide my face here. I'm not getting elbowed. I hide my body here, and I basically – and if I've got the body lock and I've got pressure on the low back, I can simply put you down. You learn about distribution, so now I answer that with an inside or an outside trip. That's why we're at now. 6 months or a year, that won't work anymore either. So we'll need something else. Or eventually it'll just be so hard to take guys down.
That's what I expect from Max Holloway. We've seen it. We've seen the level of wrestling raised so high. I wouldn't be surprised to see it almost eliminated because it's like it's not worth it because it's too much effort and you're not getting a whole lot of gains because even when you do manage to take them down, nobody's staying down.
Yeah, so now we get you down with all that work. We spend all our physiological resources to get you down and you get right back up. That sucks. Now, if people stop doing it because the resource expenditure is so high that it's not worth it, then you won't see it for like 6 months.
For a while. And then you'll see it.
And the guys in the gym won't do it. And then if your training partners don't do it that much, what happens? Your defensive wrestling, all those counters to it, all those get-ups, the skill level globally
diminishes.
Starts to degrade.
Yeah.
And when that happens, then some gym in the Midwest is wrestling crazy again. They raise it slightly higher than it was. Everybody else's, defensive systems are slightly lower. And all of a sudden, everybody's wrestling
again. It's a new game
again. Wrestling again. And that's the game. Nobody's footlocking for a while. Suddenly, guys footlock. Yeah. Oh, shit, we got to learn to defend footlocks. We learn to defend footlocks. They can't do it anymore. We're doing the can opener. Doesn't work. We get armbarred. We stop doing can openers. Everybody stops doing can openers. Can openers work again. That's the game. And it'll go on forever. And each time it happens, we add another new tool, or we change something, or we combine them differently. And that's the game forever.
UFC 199 goes down this weekend in Los Angeles. We're going to take another break, our final break. When we come back, we're going to wrap things up and look ahead to the show in Ottawa. Wonder Boy, Stephen Thompson, taking on the Water Boy, Rory McDonald.
Fed King.
Welcome back to Five Rounds Today, UFC 199 going down this weekend, and then June 18th in our nation's capital, we live in Canada, Ottawa, It all goes down at the Ottawa Civic Center that's now called the TD Place Arena. The main event certainly will spawn the number one contender at 170 pounds as Rory, the Red King, Aries, the Water Boy, one of the most remarkable fighters on the planet, takes on Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. 12-1, has that amazing victory over Johnny Hendricks, the former welterweight champion. But that, I mean, that's enough of a reason to tune into this card. The co-featured bout, Donald Cerrone, Patrick Cote. Cote's going to surprise a lot of people. I know he surprised a lot of people in his last fight. He's going to surprise a lot of people in this fight. I'm not saying he's guaranteed to win the fight. He's just going to surprise a lot of people. Valerie Letourneau and Joanne
Including Cowboy. Cowboy's going to be like, who the hell was that guy? Win or lose at the end. He's going to be, wow, I like that guy.
Valerie Letourneau and Joanne Calderwood at 125 pounds.
That's cool. Val just about kills herself.
Yeah,
like
I know. That's just too much. Steve Bosse on the card. Jay Sago, Tamda McCrory on the card.
Who's he fighting?
He's fighting the Krzysztof Jatko from Poland. And we've seen these Polish fighters. They're tough as friggin' nails.
But the Barncat, man.
Yeah.
That is,
the worst haircut, I think, at all of mixed martial arts.
We'll kill you to shave your chest. We'll kill you. Wandering through the world, you'll see, like, you know, Misha Serkinov is on the card,
He's
right?
on the card, yeah.
You see Misha Serkinov and the Barncat, and you're like, if I'm going to offend somebody or hit on someone's girlfriend, I think it'll be that guy, the weird bearded hairy guy. No, you don't want to do that. You don't want to do that. Don't do that. That's a bad
What do you expect from this main event? We haven't seen Rory McDonald since that remarkable, beautiful, highly entertaining, just ridiculous display of heart and physical abilities and skill in that fight with Robbie Lawler the second time. Do you anticipate an evolved Rory McDonald?
Yes, and mentally, I think quickly, Max Holloway, you want to get past his leg and get in to grab him, you got to get past it. Rory's going to beat you there. He wants to beat him at kicking range. Then you get inside, you got to deal with this kind of reverse punch, intercepting fist concept. Rory wants to beat him there. Then he wants to get to him, beat him there, and take him down and beat him there. He wants to win every position. That's his thinking. He can do it, but it's a hard, hard fight. There is no guarantees. And coming back from getting your face caved in is a scary proposition for most people, but probably not this psycho.
That's it for us. Next week, we'll take a closer look at all the action going down in Ottawa. For Robin Black, our producer Chase Kaiser, I'm John Ramdean. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll catch you guys next time on Fight Rants.